All right, so how did you get to this this point? You were working on Diablo 3. You've been around the industry for quite some time. So when did you say to yourself, like, okay, I want to do this game? How did this all come together?
I've been really, really passionate about RPGs, ARPGs, of course, having worked on Diablo. But I was also really into story-driven games. So I love Fire Emblem, Fire Emblem Awakening, Final Fantasy Tactics, XCOM, the Fallout series, Divinity, Original Sin, all the way to the old Baldur's Gate games, to Planescape Torment, you name it, story-driven stuff. At the same time, we realized that it's really hard to balance a game that is multiplayer head-to-head if you build a game that is singularly focused on single-player campaigns due to power levels and the way that bosses are gated and things like that. And I played over 10,000 hours of Warcraft 3, and my friends love multiplayer, and I wanted to create a game that would last at most 5 to 10 minute matches. That way, if we only have 30 minutes to play a game, we could still play it with our friends. We love head-to-head sort of games. My friends are all into that. So being able to create a classic turn-based strategy style game that is deeply multiplayer with rank ladders, with the ability to do draft mode, but still offer solo challenges and the potential to still create really cool historical battles and challenges that are related to our lore is ultra compelling for us. And that was really the inspiration. And we love Pokemon. We love the collectability of collectible card games. And we wanted to also have that cool movement on a tactical battlefield to be able to have like your general be on the board itself and to be able to move your units and to have that kind of imagination and fantasy of like your small squad or army being able to defeat people, but in a very compressed time frame. So that's really the genesis of Duelist.
So this is a lot. There's a lot going on in this game. So what has the development process been like? How did you guys like start? And talk a little bit about your team too, because I mean you've got an all-star team.
We had started initially with an amazing Kickstarter in 2014. And from that point on, it started to grow up onward and upward. Our first person that we got was Glauber Krataki, and he's an amazing pixel artist. He worked on Rogue Legacy, he worked on Chasm, and then our art director is Christoph Ha, and he is my buddy from Blizzard. He worked there for 8 years, and he worked on the concept art for Overwatch, which was Titan at the time, World of Warcraft. He worked on weapons there all the way to Diablo 3. He helped out on the cinematics. So he's really impressed a lot of the art styles. And you can see a lot of our concept art and characters are all developed by him. Now on the game design side and the creative side, you have people that have come from Riot as well as myself, which in addition to working on Diablo 3, prior to that, I worked on 3D platformers and shooters at Insomniac Games in Southern California, and I focused heavily on the Ratchet and Clank series, and I had the amazing opportunity to work and help to design and program all the weapons from Ratchet and Clank up your arsenal and onward. So it was a complete blast to be super creative on the types of weapons, because that's really the heart and core of Ratchet and Clank series. But the coolest guy on our team, in my opinion, is our very distinguished board game designer, Eric Lang. And Eric Lang, if you go to any sort of gaming store or game board store, you'll see all his stuff. He's made the board games for XCOM, Blood Rage, Dice Masters, the Warhammer 4K series, Game of Thrones, The Other Seven Sins, the most recent Bloodborne board game. And he's our lead designer. He's super passionate. And what I love about him, he's extremely humble. And he is very good at creating very punchy cards and very, very exciting, impactful units. And that's something that I love about him.
What are your goals for this game? Like, in a couple of years from now, people are going to be like, oh, do you remember Duelist? And you're going to go, yeah, I remember Duelist. I helped make it. But, like, what else do you think you want people to kind of look back and say about this game a couple of years from now?
I would love, in 3-4 years, two things that I would be ecstatic to hear is, A, the fact that our game is still around after a few years, and sure, people can just say, hey, this is a game that continues to just get better. Every single patch, every single release, every single expansion, it gets more and more polished. And we're releasing this month on 27th of April, but that's just the beginning. That's just a start for us to build a foundation. And the story that we've built, which I wrote and I spent many, many years working on this, is to create an immersive, cohesive world where all the creatures make sense. It's just not a menagerie of random cards with robots and goblins and dragons that don't connect together. This is a cohesive world that continues to evolve, and it's a living game. And we want people to say, this is an amazing game that's a living game that continues to adapt to this community, that we're constantly listening, and I feel that I can invest my time and my money into something because I know it's going to be around for several years. And then secondly, we want to build a game that has a living story. And the whole concept is that based on the decisions of our players, the way that we've written our lore is almost like a Tolkien-esque sort of Sumerian built atop of really, really cool side stories that we can build upon. So long-term, this is really a basis for a great living story game. And hopefully we can build other games on top of our world. We want to build like everything around this world of Duelist.
It's kind of funny that you're saying this because the first time that I played the game, it's very different from this, but it reminded me a lot of like the engine reminded me a lot of something like Puzzle Quest. So like Puzzle Quest at its heart is fantastic. I could play Puzzle Quest for hours, but the coolest thing about Puzzle Quest is you have like Adventure Time Puzzle Quest, Marvel Puzzle Quest, this one, that one. Do you think that like your engine, you can use that with like other licenses down the road and continue to tell like these great stories using, you know, this engine?
Our engine definitely is very skinnable. So if we do decide to introduce a new IP that isn't ours, it's very, very easy to kind of swap out a lot of our assets and to build out our, we build out a really great architecture to build new sort of effects for our game and to build a lot of gameplay mechanics very quickly. But that said, hey, I think that for us, we want to continue to build out what the community wants. And what we've discovered is that although people love our multiplayer and want a ladder to get really cool prizes every month, there's a lot of people who just want to play our solo challenges. They love our puzzle scenarios that we have a whole set of puzzle scenarios where you can complete a challenge and you have to beat the boss or the enemy in a single turn. We call it an OTK challenge, like a one-hit kill sort of challenge. Mm-hmm. So people love that scenario. It's quick and fast. They can play that anywhere. And since we plan to release on mobile later this year, not just for PC and Mac right now and on Steam, that's going to be huge because now you can play these short little challenges. You don't have to be online. You can play this anywhere, anytime. And based on that, we want to just pump out like lots of cool puzzles. So it does kind of harken to what you said. There are really cool different scenarios based on how our community wants to play our game.
Okay, going back to a couple of other things. The 3DS, it's the best-selling console on the market right now. There's more people playing the 3DS than pretty much playing anything else. Games like those free-to-play Pokemon games have kind of opened up the door for games like yours to be successful on the 3DS. Like, it's not a pipe dream anymore. Like, it could absolutely positively work on the 3DS. Is that something that you guys have thought about as well?
We have. And the order of our priorities is, we always believe, I ultimately, for me personally and in our team, we are part of the PC master race. And mm-hmm. That's really kind of our thing. Because we want people to also, it makes it a lot easier also for people on OBS and on Twitch and YouTube to be able to record and kind of push out some of this content. And that's kind of our basis for our community. That said, besides like PC and Mac, we are very, very bullish on mobile just because it's very, very portable. Now, along the same lines, 3DS is, it would be an amazing opportunity, and that's something that we're very excited by. To work on if Nintendo's open to doing something like that in the future. We feel that it's a perfect fit for our market. People love the tactics, positioning types of games. Mm-hmm. I play almost all my turn-based strategy games on the 3DS. I mean, I pretty much only play like Fire Emblem and Bravely Default and you name it, Sukhoiden. Like, there's so much stuff. Oh, that's on the PlayStation. But anyway,
yeah, no, it's okay.
You know what I'm talking about.
You're bringing it back, man. I love that game back in the day. Oh, It's probably up there somewhere.
I don't know, those 100 characters.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, man. Let's talk a little bit about the story. This was your baby. You put a lot into this. So, can you give us, like, a little bit of, like, the Reader's Digest version of it? Like, the general, you know, concept? Like, if someone is like, oh, you know, the art looks really cool for this game. I know it's a turn-based RPG, but what is it about? What do you think you'd say to them?
So, it's multi-layered. There's 41 chapters in our story, and the idea is that a starseed landed on planet Mithron 30 to 40,000 years ago, and that's like the first epoch. It's my writing is heavily influenced by Joe Abercrombie, which wrote the first Law trilogy, all the way to Brandon Sanderson, The Way of Kings, to G.R.R.M., George R.R. Martin, and of course Isaac Asimov. So there's a lot of influences around the Foundation series, mm-hmm. and also what we wanted to do is create this fantasy environment that was 60% fantasy, but 40% with a twist, so that you still feel really grounded in this environment. So basically, this magical seed landed on Mithron, and it created this tree. And the whole story and the theme is about birth and rebirth. Every 10,000 years, the roots will, like, go down into the core of the planet, and it would hibernate, and then eventually it would bloom. And every 10,000 years, the petals would, like, travel across the world and touch inanimate as well as sentient creatures. And the way that it affects them would offer them innate traits and kind of develop them in a different way. And what you're actually playing today is the modern age. This is 30,000 years in the future. And so what we're doing is also explaining all the noble houses, all the empires, all the civilizations that have occurred. And not only have we developed main characters that actually change and shift the entire world, we cover political systems, economic systems. How's magic parlayed? Why does it happen that way? Why is there a magical entropy? Why is there this monolith that's, like, created to... What's the purpose of that floating object that's on this planet? So there's a lot of thought that's put into it, and it points to how all these different creatures sort of interacted through time. So it's a pretty complex layered storyline. So for people who are interested in looking at different themes that also occur to this day, that's something that we care a lot about. And it covers things, everything from tyranny to oppression to the rise of nationalism, like very, very, like, important topics that we personally care a lot about. But we don't, like, shove it in people's faces. Like, these are really subtle details that people can notice. But it's for a mature, like, sort of audience that love to read, really. It's kind of what it boils down to.
Okay. Let's see. How does it feel to have 150,000 people playing this game before it's even officially released?
We have 150,000 matches played per day. So we have more people than that.
So you have twice as many, basically, almost. Well, no.
And so prior to for this to be in the open beta, it's fantastic. And we are actually, in a way, struggling with the capturing of all the data that's happening. Just in the matches themselves, we store about over a terabyte of data every day. Mm-hmm. And we store all this data because we actually track everything. We know the exact percentage for first mover advantage. We know the exact win rates for, like, different types of cards and, like, how those things work together. So this really informs us on how to balance the cards in a way that most players, even the most expert players, would not have that level of insight. And so we're just, like, extremely pumped. We have a great community, super active, and our tournament scene has also been growing week to week. And so more and more people are watching on Twitch. And the cool thing is we have this new tradition now. So after you see the winner of the tournament, everyone in the chat stream will actually announce the name of the winner, and then it goes into a raffle for them to, like, win something. But it's the coolest feeling when the winner of the tournament ends up seeing just, like, a wall, just all these people just, like, you know, mentioning their name.
That's awesome.
And so that's something that we've been doing.
Wow. All right. Hypothetical. Someone is thinking about downloading the game, and they're on that page, and it's like download, and they're about to click, but they don't know if they should. And you can kind of be like Jiminy Cricket and kind of go up on their shoulder and kind of give them those words of wisdom to get them to click that button, to sell them that game? What do you think you'd sell? What do you think you'd say to them to get them to download Duelist? Like, why should someone play it?
So, if someone I know is someone who is familiar with CCGs, okay, then I would say, hey, this is like Hearthstone plus Pokemon. Or I would actually then just say, hey, but Duelist is a really, really fast-paced collectible card game with a tactical battlefield. And imagine it's like Holo Chess Star Wars. So I'll say probably you can play this game 5 to 10 minutes long. The matches don't last for days or even hours. And you can play anytime, anywhere with your friends.
All right. And anything else you'd like to add? Anything else you'd like to say?
I'm good. I'm just excited for launching on the 27th of April this month. And we're going to be doing a really big set of tournaments. And we have season one of our qualifiers and circuits coming up. And so people that are really excited to compete, we have different levels of tournaments now that fit the needs and the time constraints and the aspirations of different players. And we're really excited. People who don't have a lot of time can still compete on their skill level. That's really important to us.
Absolutely.